So I once heard a teacher say conditions did not come together for a talk. Therefore, so I am going to offer something a little bit different, and I hope will be some interest, some illumination and support for practice. I remember once Martine Batchelor, some of you may know, who's taught here, talk about the evening talk is the floor show. It's the entertainment. I suppose we're veering a little bit in that direction this evening. But we've all been working so hard, you know. So I'd like you to relax and enjoy, and hopefully won't make you work too hard during this talk. So I'd like to offer some different reflections, some teachings, poems and stories connected with our theme for this week. So I hope the kind of listening, which is just more relaxed, letting it flow over you, and hopefully something might be helpful. But also I feel sometimes so these sort of gatherings, especially when it's dark and snowing, and it's like, it's almost like, I love this image of gathering around the campfire, the Dharma campfire, you know, warming our hands on the teachings and just enjoying being together. Such an amazing sense of community that grows up on these occasions, and it was very lovely to share tea with Sampo and Paul and the managers earlier, and we were in the Karuna room with the candle and the fire. So I sort of thought in that spirit we can gather. Such a precious opportunity to be together in this way. And so maybe just on that simple level of fellowship, you know, fellowship, such a wonderful thing. So we'll see how it goes. I wanted to start with a quote from one of my favourite, if I had my top 10 quotes that I often share, this one might be one of them. And it particularly, I've been hearing Paul talk about the circle of compassion, widening the circle of love. And Albert Einstein talks about this, writes about this somewhere so beautifully. And so I thought I would start us off by sharing this. So he said, or wrote, "I am changing the pronouns to be more inclusive. A human being is part of the whole, called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. We experience ourselves, our thoughts and feelings, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical illusion of our consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for a few persons nearest to us. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison by widening our circle of compassion, to embrace all living creatures and the whole nature in its beauty." Isn't that wonderful? We could probably spend a whole retreat sort of studying that. And I think what I felt an echo from the end, you know, the last part of Paul's talk yesterday, was something about this deep understanding that it's the wisdom that sees through the apparent separations, that doesn't get hung up on those, on the differences, that the compassion that is natural rising from that. And also that when we consciously, intentionally, as we're trying to show in the in the teachings and the practices, and maybe you kind of know this, that when your heart opens, you know, there's a kind of natural understanding, you know, when there's compassion, is there a me and a you? Is there really, you know, a line you can draw in the air and say, you know, this is me on this side and you on that side, right? It feels to me in those moments and times when we have some sense of care, of compassion, you know, it doesn't doesn't make sense. So in that way, the wisdom and the compassion can co-arise, support each other somehow. One can open to the other. So thank you, Albert. So I want to share a story, and there are many, many teaching stories, and for some reason today these are one of the ones that came to mind. So I think it follows on a bit from Albert, in that it's a story that describes kindness, compassion between different species, in this case a humans and a whale. And so this story I heard, I hope I remember accurately enough, which really, really touched me. I hope I can do it justice. This is something that really happened sometime fairly recently, near San Francisco, quite near the, what's it called? Is it called the Golden Gate Bridge? You know, a special bridge they have there. And a whale, I can't remember which kind of whale, I'm afraid, but a whale, a big whale, became entangled in fishing net in that area of the sea. And some divers, I think it was five divers, went down into the water with some kind of cutting equipment, maybe knives or something like that. And they, you know, they had all the diving equipment, and they dived down to try to release the whale. So they worked away with their knives, cutting away at the net that was entrapping the whales. It couldn't move, it couldn't swim, it would have died if someone hadn't helped them. And so the divers were cutting away, and gradually, and the whale just stayed really, really still and just let the divers, you know, work away, cutting away at the netting. And then eventually all the netting fell away and the divers kind of swam back. And the whale moved around and looked each diver in the eyes with one of its great eyes, and moved around and just had a moment of looking at each of the divers before it swam away. Something about that just like totally blows me away, as you can see. It's like every time I tell it, I'm like, no. And so just the power of story, you know, and the power of narrative, of memory, to move our hearts. And as part of what we're exploring this week is what, you know, what opens the heart, what actually brings, you don't have to cry every time, you know, like I cry at the drop of a hat, but not everyone's like that. You know. But something that just, you know, really somehow you feel it, you get it, you know, it's not just an idea, but you, yeah, something about that connection and that care and and the bravery of the divers. And there's a lot there, isn't there? Because this huge animal could easily have sort of, you know, probably killed one of them just by a swipe of the tail, not even meaning to, you know. So the power of story, the power of memory. So, yeah, I have another couple of stories. I'm going to spread them out. So I'm going to move now to a poem. So for some of us, again, not everybody, again, poems, maybe writing them or reading them, can be, again, a way of understanding, of exploring. You know, I don't know if you've ever tried to write something. It's the act of creating or studying. It's like the way that, or writing a poem, you really, it makes you dig deep. So this is one of my favorite poems, by an American, Arab American poet called Naomi Shihab Nye. And I will, at the end of the retreat, I'll put the references, so if you want to, you know, go find them, you can. Before you know what kindness really is, you must lose things. Feel the future dissolve in a moment, like salt in a weakened broth. What you held in your hand, what you counted and carefully saved, all this must go, so you know how desolate the landscape can be between the regions of kindness. How you ride and ride, thinking the bus will never stop. The passengers eating maize and chicken will stare out of the window forever. Before you learn the tender gravity of kindness, you must travel where the Indian in a white poncho lies dead by the side of the road. You must see how this could be you, that he too was someone who journeyed through the night with plans and the simple breath that kept him alive. Before you know kindness as the deepest thing inside, you must know sorrow as the other deepest thing. You must wake up with sorrow. You must speak to it till your voice catches the thread of all sorrows and you see the size of the cloth. Then it is only kindness that makes sense anymore. Only kindness that ties your shoes and sends you out into the day to gaze at bread. Only kindness that raises its head from the crowd of the world to say, it is I you have been looking for, and then goes with you everywhere, like a shadow or a friend. Sometimes I think that practice of learning by heart, learning text by heart, is, you know, a kind of lost art, or a wonderful practice. A poem like that, or a text, you know, to learn by heart so we can carry it with us. I've done that at times with different things, and it becomes like a teaching that you sort of seems to can permeate your day and your week. Just again, if we're thinking of different ways of exploring and cultivating and practicing, that's, I think, a really wonderful one. So I'd like to tell you another story. And one of my favourite teaching stories, I hope I can do justice to this. Let's see. So, there was a very, very wise and holy rabbi who lived some time ago somewhere in Central Europe. The group of very devoted students, they lived very simply together in the forest. And every week the rabbi would come to a special simple dinner where the local people would be invited to come if they wanted, so they could come and spend some time with this holy person. And the students would gather and the rabbi would come. And one week this extremely uncouth person came, peasant, and sat down at the table with several very large radishes, started to cut the radishes up and eat them and crunch them very, very loudly. And the students were trying to censure him with their looks, like, sort of, shh, you know, be quiet, and, you know, and they couldn't, he didn't notice he was enjoying the radishes so much. And finally, the wise rabbi sort of, you know, noticed what was going on, and at some point just gently cleared his throat and said, "Do you know, I could just do with a really good radish. Does anybody know where I could get one?" And with a flush of joy and happiness, the radish eater gathered up some of the pieces he had cut and passed them to the rabbi. Yeah, so which character are you in the story? You know, that's, I think, yeah, sort of, you could see yourself perhaps as all, you know, any one of the three, maybe. I find that such a beautiful story, I think, for lots of reasons. I don't know, I hope you know, the way we can get a bit, you know, like the students, you know. So, anyway, I won't spoil the story by saying too much about it. But again, the power of story to illuminate. I sometimes feel like the human heart, and perhaps, again, this is, we have different temperaments, different psychological temperaments, but maybe, you know, for all of us at some level, like, the heart speaks story, speaks image, speaks metaphor, and somehow some of the things we most want to understand in our life, somehow when you spell it all out, it's as, you know, step-by-step logic, it just doesn't quite work, or it doesn't seem to capture the fullness of meaning. I really like, I learned from Stephen Batchelor, this, the need to translate thought into the language of feeling, that something about the understanding and learning and insight that, you know, it's like, again, as we're trying to explore in this week, how do we speak to our heart? How do we, you know, suggest and indicate and encourage, and, you know, and maybe stories and music and images can sort of sometimes speak to the heart, speak directly to the heart mind in a way that just plain old concept just can't quite do it. So, let's see. Well, if you fall asleep, we'll wake you up at the end, so don't worry. So another poem. This poem was once when I was on retreat at Gaia House, and somebody had put this poem on the notice board, because we did do naughty things like that sometimes, wouldn't you? That's but it stayed there for a while, and it seemed to speak to a lot of people. I think it got taken down, and then there was a rebellion, or wanted it put up again. And it's one you may know. Again, it might be one of my top 10. And it feels particularly relevant to what we were exploring a bit in the talk on the inner critic. It seems to, I think, speak very directly to that. So this is a poem called Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert, repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about despair, yours, and I will tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving over the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the rivers and the mountains. Meanwhile, the wild geese high in the clean blue air are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like a wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over announcing your place in the family of things. Now, whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. Another story. Hope you can let this wash over you. This is a little story from my own experience, my own practice many, many years ago, but anyway, it came to mind today, so I thought, what the heck? And this story illustrates how you can have fun being kind. So, for those fun-loving yogis amongst you, I was, for a while, as you do sometimes, so helpfully, I think, in Dharma practice, to take a theme for a month or longer, you know, and it's such a wonderful, and you think about it and you read about it and you sort of see how it can support your actions and your words. And so I was doing this with generosity for a while. I was in London in the Royal Festival Hall. I just think that was funny, but anyway, carry on. Feel free. So I was in the Royal Festival Hall in London, which is a great, marvellous concert hall. And I've been going there on and off over many years, and I was there, and can't remember why I was there. Anyway, I was there, and I thought, oh, I'll go to a concert. You know, they have a wonderful concert. There was a wonderful concert. It was like Mozart, Brahms, and something else. I thought, yeah, and I looked at the watch. Oh, dear, I haven't got time. Oh, rats, I wish I thought of that sooner. And I thought, I know. I can buy a ticket for someone else. Because I can't go. So, yeah, that's a good idea. Right. So I thought, right, oh, I feel a bit silly. I shouldn't do that. But then I was brave, as you sometimes have to be with generosity. Maybe lots of other things. So I went to the box office and said what I wanted to do. And the guy just looked at me and went, what? So I said it again. And he was like, I think I need to ask my supervisor. So the supervisor came. And so I said it again. And she was like, I suppose that's okay. So I bought the ticket, and then I just said, just give it to the next person. And then I ran away. I'd heard that it was good to stay and see, and you know, they do in the East, the people will give meals at the monastery for the monks and the nuns and the people practicing, and then they'll stay and they'll watch and they'll glow with happiness from seeing their dana, you know, their generosity happening. I couldn't quite do that. And also I felt like I almost didn't want to know who it was, because then I could imagine it could be anybody. It could have been one of you. Probably not, but... And I had such fun with that, the whole thing. And there's something about the playfulness and a certain sort of daring and a certain sort of... doing something different that I think is somehow, there's something very important about in this, that kindness is not a policy. We're not going to ask you to write a policy kindness for yourself at the end of the retreat. Take it with you and then apply it. Every week you're going, you know, and you administrate it and then tick. And you, no, we're not going to do that. Kindness is not a policy. You know? And something about the way that kindness or generosity, these things, can kind of break through that social veneer of, you know, of what you're supposed to do and not do. And so maybe that breaks through some of that sense of self and other, or, you know, social norms. And that there's something very liberating about that, perhaps, in terms of who we think we are, other people are, what you should or shouldn't do. And, you know, so something about the being willing to take a risk, I think, is really, really important here. You know, I mean, we could probably talk a lot more about that, but you think of times when you've offered kindness or you've received it, like, and sometimes it just feels like quite a radical thing. Someone has reached out towards you through some boundary of, oh, you don't do that, or, you know, something like that. Like, another story is coming to mind. I was thinking of suddenly remembering being in the tube in London and finding this young woman leaning on a wall, sort of in the rush hour, people flooding by, and she was just crying and looking, you know, really not very well. And so I stopped and I just, you know, sort of was with her for a while and started to talk. She didn't speak very good English, and so, but we managed to communicate. And anyway, it turned out that you know, she was trying to get in touch with somebody, but her phone didn't work down in the tube. So I got hold of her because she was really wobbly, and we went up, and then we went up the escalator. She rang her friend, relief, connected with that person. And then I brought her back down the escalator and took her to the right platform. And then I didn't actually get on the train with her. I think she was okay by that point, and she only had to go like four stops, and she was by that point sort of okay. But it was such a, it just felt like such a beautiful kind of, just, you know, sort of random connection. But I could you know, I, for me, it felt like I was just, you know, it was just something lovely about that moment and that connection. And it was so, it just, you know, I just had to slightly come out of my, you know, my agenda, my schedule, which I can be quite tight about. So yeah, that story came to mind. And was that saying, random acts of, senseless acts of beauty, random acts of kindness. It used to be a bumper sticker in the States, something like that. So that's really kind of, it's a bit like that. You know, and how the richness of life when we're available for that, those moments. Okay, there were two stories. Okay, let's... So you're getting it yet? You've got it. Have you? All right. Can you stop now? Yeah. So I wanted to share. See, I think the time is going okay. So different shift of mode here. I thought I would like to share with you the one of the teachings of the Buddha on loving kindness, on metta. And it's one of the most famous and often quoted teachings, although there are many, many others in the suttas. And I just thought it might be good for us to hear this. And again, just see what resonates for you, and maybe you can put this on the board. Maybe put it on the board. I just, before I read it, I'm very aware of, you know, many images of the Buddha who, you know, you see this sort of figure sitting there serenely, you know, these statues often, usually the Buddha sitting and looking very, very serene and beautiful. And I love the stories in the suttas where, you know, the Buddha is it's like you can, there's a lot more to him than that. You know, there was one story where he was visiting a sick monk, and the monk was really sick, and so the Buddha goes in with maybe a couple of disciples, and this poor monk is, you know, sort of lying in his own excrement, and you know, they and the Buddha asks for water, and he himself with his own hands helps to clean the monk and find new coverings and new clothes. And I think that's the image of the Buddha that really speaks to me, and I feel like it's really, really important aspect of him and his teachings. And perhaps there's some echo of that in this, the Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways. Peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. A text worthy of committing to memory, for sure. We could easily spend a whole retreat just studying that piece by piece. But yeah, I'll put it on the board. So many ways that we can incline our hearts and minds, explore, study, enact, speak, think. And a very important thing for me has been to not let great aspiration be kidnapped by the inner critic and turned into impossible ideal. If that makes sense. Really, really, really important. I hope it's like something about, allowing the teachings and to lift and inspire and encourage, but not to let it turn into that sort of measuring stick. It's like making the immeasurable into a measuring stick. It's something to be really careful about. So, I have two more things I'd like to share. And this next one, a little different, invites your participation, if you dare. Now, I'm going to share with you a chant that is, I made up the tune to some words that I found very, very moving from a book by Tanisara called Time to Stand Up, which is an amazing, wonderful book. Put it on the list at the end of the retreat, along with 59,000 other ones, about the practice of compassion in relation to climate change and the environmental crisis. And for her and for Kitisaro, who are both now teaching at the Forest Refuge, that's rather lovely where I live, kind of like they're there, I'm here, it's like we're all together. And for them, this compassion practice has been extremely important both in their activism and in their spiritual practice and their teaching. So I took these words, which are part of their practice of evoking or invoking the bodhisattva of compassion, the Kuan Yin, this kind of embodiment of compassion sometimes called, I can never say, Avalokitesvara. That's really bad. I should practice saying that. Anyway, that's, I guess, the Tibetan. Anyway, it's the embodiment of compassion, and in this little chant refers to this one, which is the one. It's the Bodhisattva of compassion. So you might have a figure, a great teacher, or you might have an imaginal image. Or for me, sometimes I feel it more like a compassionate awareness that is here. It's like that's what our mind is when it's on a good day, right? So depending on how your mind works, you know, what feels helpful, you might imagine a figure, you know, or just having this sense of when it's we talk about the one who listens, it's in a way this one. This one, when it is listening and open and compassionate, it's like it can be us, it can be here, but it's also has this sort of transpersonal quality. It doesn't belong to anyone. It doesn't have any edges to it. So when we connect with compassion, we're really, you know, going back to Albert at the beginning, we're really entering the field of blessing, the field of life without division. So the words are, I return my life to the one who listens to the sounds of the world. So the Bodhisattva is often depicted as being, it's like this, the one who can hear, can listen, can hear the pain of the world, can hear the cries of the world, and not be overcome, not be overwhelmed, but actually be able to hold all that, receive all that in the great heart, the heart made great, and the vastness of our heart. You know, this isn't someone else's heart they're talking about. It's awakening to that vastness of heart, which is compassionate. So I've changed the word slightly for my little chant. So see, now I'm getting a bit nervous if I can remember it. Gone blank. Oh. And I would like to invite you to join in. I'll sing it a few times, but I really, really, really want you to feel completely fine to not join in, right? So, because it's like, it's fine. If it's just me singing, that's fine. It feels very important to me to say that, I want you to understand that you do not have to join in, because sometimes you just don't want to. So that's fine. But let's join our voices together, and perhaps with that sense of the radiating out in all directions of our good-heartedness, of our intentions, of our practice here, that the sound can carry the good intentions. So let's see if I can remember it. Resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world. Resting deeply, I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world, resting, resting deeply. I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world, resting, resting deeply. I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world, resting, resting deeply. I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world, resting, resting deeply. I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world, resting, resting deeply. I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world, resting, resting deeply. I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world.
Last time.
Resting, resting deeply. I return my life to the one who listens deeply to the sounds of the world.